living in a day when sin is accepted and the people hunger and for pleasure. Oh, heal I lay, take away the stones and build the tower. Get the rich man warm as soon as hour that we might stand. We might stand. Sit a rich man on the tower. Everybody stay away. The enemy is closer than you think. Displayed their wicked sin like Sodom. Forgive them, Lord.
Never played with that cloud in a while.
Beats me. I don't know.
Oh, he just popped on Slack. He'll probably be on here in a second.
Alright.
Okay. So, I guess we'll just get right to it because we want to do it so you can get up early tomorrow, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to be working a bunch until I leave for Texas in like 2.5 weeks for Christmas. No, I finally
did
got...
Did your parents move here?
My parents are with me, yeah.
Well, I thought you said something about they're going to move to Texas.
I don't know. My dad might be able to talk to someone about a job offer that's like the best I can understand it. But we'll kind of just see what happens there.
Yeah, right now my mom's in Phoenix looking at real estate because we're moving back to there soon.
Oh, nice. I finally got my package in the mail, so it... I don't know where it's been for 2 days, but it finally showed up today.
What was in this package?
I got, like, the 4K edition of Apocalypse Now, and it was, like, $10 off Amazon, which is the best deal I could find. And, Yeah, and then it finally came in the mail because I was like, great. Like, it was like a matter of, like, so, you know, Amazon sold out of them on Black Friday. So I don't know if they could be able to do a replacement on something that they don't even have inventory for. And then yesterday I had to do this whole rigmarole or whatever about my boss wanted, like, 15 Amazon Fire Sticks. And he wanted them at the Black Friday price, which was like, you know, $20, so they were half off. And I had to go through this whole thing regarding checking different websites just to order 15 straight, and it wouldn't let you. So to bypass that, you have to basically get like roughly 8 people, and you can only buy 2 per person or per order. So if you get like 8 people to buy 2 at a time, then he just ship it all to, like, my boss's office or something. So he said he had family members. And we had his business card, so we just kind of just used his card to buy it. So, like, I have his business card on my Amazon account. it's tempting to use it, but I better not, because I don't want to try to explain that later, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
You were going to use it for buying what he wanted you to buy, or
yeah,
Apocalypse Now?
No, I already made the order for Apocalypse Now, but no, like all the Fire Stick stuff was yesterday on Cyber Monday. So like it was just like, huh, I could always buy like an expensive Perfect Grade Evangelion, and then he'll just be like, I don't know what this charge is here for, but I have so much money, so well. But I think if you do bad, it's all gonna catch up to you eventually. So
yeah, you don't want to be, like, unauthorized buying stuff with your boss.
Yeah, well, this is a guy I've known for 20 years, so that would be an interesting conversation to try to lie to him, and he reads right through BS anyways, so I wouldn't win that one. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, speaking of BS, getting down to the official Watchmen podcast once more, and I figure we can probably talk about Episode 6. This and Episode 7 had, like, a chunk of material to talk about.
Yeah, I think it's best to just keep doing them one at a time because there's so much to go through.
Yeah.
So they had, this is the one that came out a couple weeks ago, and they had a lot of flashbacks. It starts off with this continuation of the Hooded Justice TV show.
The flashbacks, it's Knight taking a bunch of her grandfather's like nostalgia pills. Or remember berries to make a South Park reference. And she basically goes into, like, this drug-induced, like, remembering her grandfather's, like, past or whatever. And so it kind of explains, like, his backstory on, like, what kind of man he was.
In the show, they have him portrayed as white, but then in the episode, after they go through the, TV version, they reveal that the guy is actually black, and they talk about his origin, which is that he was the policeman who had to deal with racism, and so
in his own department,
the other cops tried to lynch him.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. Yeah, so
they show him, like, in the first scene where TV stuff, they have, like, him with Pretty Justice and everything.
Yeah, and it's, like, two, like...
That was based on reality, too, the gay stuff.
It's, like, two feds are, like, in, an interview room, and they're, like, you know, like, oh, you know, we're so thankful, but we gotta know, man, what's with the noose? And then, like, I think it's, like, you hang your victims, and then, like, he's got, like, his, like, good cop, bad cop thing. And the other guy kept saying sex stuff. He's just like, so my partner here, he thinks it's, and they just interrupts, and he's like, it's sex stuff. I think you use it for sex stuff. And then they find out, like, he's gay. And they're like, well, we're going to blackmail you. Because I don't even know who he was porking or whatever they caught him with. I can't remember. And he just goes in there and just wrecks their crap. Shoot. John, can you hear me?
Well, isn't it Hooded Justice with Captain Metropolis? That was, like, the two of them?
Yeah, well, that's how...
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, well, that's how the story's been. I thought, like, there was somebody else. Maybe they didn't mention Captain Metropolis. Well, like, oh, we have photo evidence on you on that.
The other guy is just him with his mask off, right?
You talking about, like, in the interrogation room?
I don't know.
I'm talking about, like, the TV show part, like, where it was in color.
Yeah, well, they changed it around, and it's not supposed to be, like, totally accurate or whatever.
Gotcha.
You know, because the whole point is, like, the show is changing things or something. But, yeah. And then later on, they show that, the police are watching this show, and the Laurie Strode character shows up, and she's like, turn that crap off. She doesn't like that they're watching this show, which is... rated TV MA or R or whatever on the job.
Yeah. Well, it was the fact that, like, you know, Knight goes into that coma because they have her locked up, and she swallowed those pills in front of, like, you know, before she got taken in. And then you... Yeah, so then she's just, like, you know, explaining, like, what's going to happen to her, and then she just kind of blacks out. And then it goes straight into, like, her grandfather's backstory regarding him being passing the cadet school for the New York Police Department. And basically having to deal with, like, you know, racism in his own department where he can't really get work done. And as white racist people say, you know, don't get into white people's business or whatever. Even though he apprehends a guy that takes, like, he torches, like, a beer bottle or whatever to burn down, like, a Jewish bakery or something.
Yeah, they show this guy, he kind of just casually is walking by and just drops it in there.
And then he didn't just drop it in there, he throws it through the window.
Yeah, but then when he gets arrested, he acts like, oh, I didn't do nothing, and then he gets arrested, and he's kind of standoffish with the police officers in there, saying, like, you're going to side with one of us or one of them or something like that. And he calls the black officer a spook, and the white officers get upset at him about that, which is kind of weird because otherwise they don't seem to like the black officer much. Uh-huh. But then they, I guess they just let him go or whatever, because later on they show him again and he's like loose. And
they basically got him out. I guess without any kind of evidence, they couldn't. Well, I mean, like, he's part of, like, they're all part of that same organization where, like, it's, you know, he's the Knight's grandfather in the memories. He gets, you know, like, he passes cadet school, and one of the other black officers just tells him, to warns him to beware of the Cyclops or whatever. And that's, like, the hate group that's in New York City. which is basically a clans group.
And, yeah.
So, like, they're all, like, in, you find out later that this guy that's, you know, torching, like, Jewish establishments is, they're all involved in the Cyclops group.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the fact that, like, he becomes Hood of Justice because, like, they, you know, the officers come and, like, try to lynch him to scare him. But they put a hood around his head. And as he's walking home, he finds, like, this guy, this man and woman that are being mugged. And he puts the hood on and basically, like, takes justice in his own hands. And, like, his wife is, like, incredibly supportive of this at first. Which doesn't make any sense to me, like, how this episode ends.
Yeah, because she turns on him over it later, like, once they have a kid and the kid is trying to emulate him. Like, putting on a white face and stuff. And saying, yeah. Like, oh, I want to start lynching people, too, or whatever.
Yeah. It's interesting, like, he's, you know, at first the wife was like, no, this is how you gotta, like, you know, fight for the black folk or whatever. And then as soon as they have a kid and he tries doing the same thing, she's like, look what you've become. I can't believe you took it this far. And it was like, and I'm like, you know, woman, it was your idea for me to continue through this. Because she's the one that supported it. And she definitely supported it when Captain Metropolis shows up. And, like, you know, like, oh, you can join the Minutemen group or whatever, but first you must, like, you know, bot my asshole and, like, have gay sex with me.
Yeah. So, Captain Metropolis, I guess they have him being portrayed as kind of being, like, watering down what Hood of Justice is trying to do and making it sort of generic superhero stuff, because he tries to get a conference about the Cyclops.
Yeah, he was going to basically bust it wide open, and then they interrupt him, and like, oh, there's a death ray, and, you know, like, we're going to stop it. And he's just like, dude, what the fuck? Like,
yeah, he's like, Moloch is harnessing the energy of the sun to create a solar ray to destroy the Earth or something like that. And then they show that he's, like, getting kind of angry about that, kind of walks off. But I guess they still like each other because of gay stuff.
I think it's more of a like, you know, in order to keep this job going, you have to basically like plow me in the butthole.
Yeah, maybe that's true. That like this is like some sort of sexual domination. Like the only way he could be tolerated in the superhero business is if he. Satisfied this other white superhero with like blonde hair and blue eyes that is like dominating him or something. Like this is like another form of oppression.
No, Captain Metropolis likes taking it from the black man.
Is that right? I wasn't paying too much attention to that. I tried to tune it out and not remember the details of the game.
It was kind of just like, you know, bam right there or whatever. And you know, okay. I guess the message is in order to be in the superhero business, you gotta, you know, fuck each other over in the ass.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
all the characters in Watchmen are always, like, having sex, whether they're, like, straight, like the comedian, or I guess, Dr. Manhattan, or these guys that are gay, like, I guess they have to do that to make it more realistic or something.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
But even the original comic, I don't know if this stuff was in it or not about them being gay, but definitely like the stuff with the comedian and the Night Owl and Silk Spectre and all that.
Yeah,
a lot of sexual content related to those characters, which was definitely like a first in comics at that time, because it was one of the first comics that was published without the comics code, which was being used to. You know, to prevent them from displaying sexual content in comics up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like in the mid-80s, DC started putting these labels on the corner of their comics saying, DC Comics, they're not just for kids anymore, for mature readers only, and that kind of stuff. So Alan Moore was kind of like the pioneer in that area, where when he was doing Swamp Thing before Watchmen,
yeah,
he did some issues where Swamp Thing was having sex with his girlfriend, and the comics code was like, we're not going to put the code on this. And so DC just published it without the code. And then they were like, okay, well, if we can get away with this and still get our comics sold at retailers, especially now that there's like direct comic shops, because they didn't have to rely on the newsstands.
Yeah.
Which, because newsstands, basically they sold comic books to children. Mm-hmm. But the comic shops sold them to, like, adult nerds who, like, wanted, like, edgier stuff to keep them interested.
Yeah.
So that kind of was how comics evolved into what they are today, where they're all about, like, here's, like, this new gay superhero and stuff.
Yeah.
First gay Green Lantern or whatever that DC did a few years ago and all that kind of stuff. That's all only possible because the comics code died out.
It was kind of like it got to the point where, like, the comics code didn't really, like, serve a purpose anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it did stick around after that for another 30 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still used by companies like Archie on, like, their kids' comics, you know. Mm-hmm. But even they don't use it anymore. It's totally defunct now.
I'm trying to think what... I mean, the next thing that kind of happened in this episode... Well, there was that one scene where, like, basically halfway through the episode, Jean Smart is, okay, so, like, they go to, like, what was it, like, the hideout for the Cyclops people, and then, like, Hooded Justice beats up, like, five or six Clans people, and then they got the guy that owns the shop, which is actually the guy that was, like, you know, burning down, like, Jewish bakeries or whatever, and he's, like, you know, blasting Hooded Justice with a shotgun. And then, like, when they jump out of the window, because there's this whole transition thing where, you know, like, you see the person as her grandfather, then it goes back to Knight, kind of, like, and it shows her, like, in that role for, like, a brief second. And I never understood the whole purpose of, like, the woman with that played piano that was, like, in color when everything else was black and white. I didn't get what that was supposed to be a reference of. But,
I'm not sure either.
But no, the thing was, Hood of Justice was jumping out of the window, and then, like, time just kind of froze, and they did that long, like, camera rotation thing. And then you see, like, Jean Smart show up, and she's like, hey, you know, like, you're still under this, and, you know, like, blink if you can hear me. Because it's kind of like this whole thing where, you know, she's able to kind of communicate between, like, the real world and this dream world. And then, like, her husband shows up.
Scene where they had some color in the black and white section, which was where there was a police officers in a car, and they were talking to Hood of Justice when he was still a cop, and saying to him, like, hey, we've just finished doing some business. Do you want to come meet us at the donut shop or something like that? And then he was like, no thanks. And then they're like, we don't really like your attitude. And then they kind of drive off, like, pulling a black guy with, like, a rope from the back of their car. And they show blood on the ground. So it's, like, just one, like, red stream on the ground. Like how in Sin City, it's all black and white with the exception of the red.
Yeah, that was during the lynching scene. I didn't catch the blood. I forgot about the blood part.
Yeah, well, they did the red to make it especially noticeable, like, what was going on with the I guess it was a corpse at that point being dragged.
Wait, are you talking about towards the end when, like, it's old man Lou Gossett Jr. that hangs up Don Johnson? And then, like, I think they showed, like, colored blood in that, too.
They may have shown a flashback to the scene then, I don't know. I was thinking of the scene where when he's still a cop and they show the black guy being dragged. And there was, like, an incident like this. I don't know how many years ago it was, but in the real world, there was some case where some rednecks, like, dragged a black guy from the back of their truck with a rope. So I guess this kind of stuff does happen. But
Rare. You mean, like, when they were, like, when the cops were driving off trying to talk to the to Watts or whatever, and then, like, they got, like, black people tied in the back of their bumper. And he's just like, yeah, buddy, I'm glad you didn't go with them. And then they still wound up capturing him and... Yeah, that was weird.
Well, after they drag him, then they come back and they start beating Hood of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
That was like when they showed, like, oh, he's never going to get along with these cops. He has to become, like, a vigilante on his own. Because mm-hmm. Then the cops, they take him up to a tree and they try to lynch the guy.
Yeah.
But I guess somehow he survives, and so he becomes...
Well, no, they purposely let him down to scare him to make sure he don't mess with white folks' business.
Okay, that's right. They cut him down. Okay.
Go ahead.
And then he just keeps the rope around his neck. But starts
as he's walking through the city.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, that kind of makes it obvious. You would think like who he is to these cops, but I guess they don't really figure it out because he just puts on a hood and then they're like,
well,
"Oh,
you know." After they lynched him, it was no one saw him put on the hood when he rescued the couple that was in danger. And I guess like they didn't put two and two together. Right.
People aren't superhero stuff, they never figure out secret identities.
Yeah. What was it? Like, so the other plot of this is the fact that basically like black people start murdering each other after seeing a movie. And so the whole plot for this is they bring him in because he apparently speaks their language, is like one of them said, like, yeah, they're a bunch of animals, they just decided to kill each other, and you know, like monkey goat, you know, black police officer, go translate what these like honky or these jungle swinger honky vine swingers monkeys, you know, monkeys. Yeah, that's right, honky. Excuse my racial mispronunciation there. We are honkies, they are right. Not yes.
Right.
He's like, you know, yeah, go interpret these vine swingers for us. Like, you know, they're a bunch of animals or whatever. And he goes,
yeah, he asks, like, what happened in there? And the cop says, what always happens when you put a bunch of animals together in a cage?
Yeah.
Why don't you go figure out it? You speak their language.
Yeah.
Yeah, he sends the guy in there, and there's all a bunch of black people that have, like, died. Because the KKK... like put a mind control device in the movie projector to make them kill each other.
Yeah, so they're...
But in the real world, you have black people shooting each other over seats at Black Panther without any need for a mind control device.
So was that? And you pull up the reference because that happened in North Carolina. So there was an actual like news report on that happening where people get into a moment over a seat during Black Panther.
Yeah, the sort of moment you might see in the Boondocks.
Yes, that particular moment. No, but he starts, like, what was it? He starts talking to the woman, and she's explaining, like, I heard voices about, like, I needed to kill my own kind, and it didn't seem right. And then he kind of notices that somebody sneaks out the back with a projector, and he starts, and it's in, like, one of those, like, you know, trucks or whatever. And then apparently he's on the side of the town where, like, the guy that he arrested in the very beginning of the episode was there, because apparently time has passed, and so like Watts has like a son now with his wife, and so like, and then the guy looks at him, he's just like, you know, I think I might know you, but you know, all you know, jungle monkeys look all the same to me. Or he calls him Jigs, I guess it was short for Jigaboo or whatever.
Yeah, that was my assumption, is that I've never heard that shortening before.
That's a new term for me. So it's just kind of like, oh, you know, you Jigs look all the same, but I'm pretty sure I might know you from somewhere. And then he just pulls out his gun and caps him like point blank in the face. And so then his purpose is he walks into like their establishment, and their goal is to make all these movie projectors and basically put in an audio track within the film to state that black people should kill each other. And he's in there basically with his, like, you know, police-issued revolver and just starts capping people. And he goes in the back room where, like, it's the guy that basically, like, has been behind, like, the Cyclops group, sort of. And he's over there, like, you know, like, he didn't hear any of the gunshots, which the gunshots didn't even sound that loud to begin with. It was like, I'm like, that .38 is not silenced like that. Like, guns are pretty loud. And it was like, it would sound like a very, like, light-sounding gun. It was weird. But yeah, he didn't hear any of this, and then of course, like, he gets he gets choked in the back room, and then Watts takes one of the cameras with him, I guess for evidence, I don't know, and he winds up like putting on
the development of like silencer technology, so the gun sounded too.
Silencer is on the extended part of a barrel of a gun, and the thing is, like, there's really revolvers. Don't have silencers unless you have to get a custom revolver that can hold a silencer. But most of them, nearly all of them, do not, or they have no way to equip a silencer with it, especially not in like 1940 something. So I just like heard the sound. And I was like, I don't know why that gun doesn't sound like. Yeah, it's a 38, but a 38 sounds loud.
Yeah.
Anyway,
speaking of 38, I think this was set in 1938 because at one point they show a.
It starts out in 38. Yes.
They show an Action Comics number one that somebody is reading at the newspaper.
Well, stadium. I mean, what gave away the year was the fact it was the class of 38, like, police force cadet thing that was on the banner in the back at the very beginning. And then, but then you notice, like, they made a time, you know, they put a timestamp on it, like, oh, it's Action Comics number one with this, like, guy from Krypton that, like, is really strong or whatever.
Yeah, it's got the iconic image of Superman lifting up a car.
Yeah.
On the cover.
I'm just thinking.
So yeah, we back to where we were. There was a guy who's like reading out a bunch of like racist stuff, and then Hooded Justice shows up and like beats him up.
Well, he basically chokes him to death on his own like wire cord or whatever, and then he puts all the bodies together in the warehouse, and then just like sets that sucker on fire, and just kind of watches it. And I'm like, the fire department's gonna come. How are you gonna explain? How are you going to explain with a giant camera under your arm and a mask on you that, like, you probably didn't have anything to do with it? And all he does is he goes home and then finds his kid trying to dress up like him. And he's like, no, you can't. That mask is evil. You can't put that on. And his wife is like, yeah, it is. And, like, you look what you became. And I'm like, again, woman, you're the one that supported him to be Hooded Justice in the first place. And...
Right.
That's,
yeah, he wears white face, which is, I guess, not racist.
Yeah, well, it's half a white face because it's just around the eyes. And we saw that, and I was like, hold up. How did HBO get away with... Oh, wait. I was like, how did they get away with this? I was like, come on. Like, because if it's the opposite, like, this show would be banned already.
Well, the black woman that does wear black face as well, you know? Like, under her Night Owl, like, costume, you know? She, like, makes her face especially dark to go into action.
Are you talking about the main girl, Knight? Like, she basically, like, sprays her eyes black.
Yeah, so she's wearing blackface.
But she's black already. Like, that doesn't really count, I don't think.
Well, I was told that black makeup on the face is proof of evil or something, you know? Like, anyone who does this or even... says that, but this might be okay in terms of a Halloween costume, like Megyn Kelly gets fired.
But,
know?
Like, I thought, and it shows how ignorant I am, if you're black and you put more black on you, that's not really, that shouldn't count. Like, if I'm, right. You know, if you're a Caucasian white dude, and you want to be, like, you know, paler than what you are, then, like, you're not really, it's not white face or black face or anything. Like, it just kind of... That's the way I'm perceiving it as, but I guess, like, I don't think with the left you can win that argument either way.
Well, obviously black people can put whatever color paint on their face that they like, and nobody's going to care.
Yeah,
But, yeah, they can put black or white depending on whatever their superhero identity is, and nobody's going to mind that.
I'm just going to stop trying to figure that out and be like, alright, fine. Like, because you try to make logic of, like, those arguments... And then you realize you're wrong because, first of all, you don't think like them, and they know it.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know what? It's not even worth the fight. I don't care. I don't want to be on Antifa's blacklist. Yada yada. You know, it's just not worth it.
Yeah, you'll be on there next to those women who were protesting at the Drag Queen Story Hour.
That should be a protest. Well, I mean, like, you had the guy that went in there for a Q&A at a drag story time thing, and he was, like, preaching the gospel, and, like, I don't know the whole context of that. I mean, from my standpoint, I was like, I mean, you know, as a Christian, you go out and preach the word, and, you know, this guy's just like, this is freaking child abuse. Like, I don't know if they were, like, promoting kids to do... I mean, I still think it's messed up either way, but, like, I don't know if they were promoting kids to do drag queen stuff. It's just...
I mean, that's the whole point of drag queens doing the stories.
Like, it's to promote their lifestyle, right?
The stories, right? Like, there's no need for it to be specifically drag queens doing it. The point is to normalize that to children, to indoctrinate them into LGBT at a young age, obviously.
Yeah, and that's why the guy was claiming it as child abuse. Like, you know, like, I mean, shoot, like, I didn't really know, like, mucks on drag queens until, like, maybe 10, 15 years ago, but, like, nobody did that out in public where, you know, where I was. And if they had it, it was, like, in certain areas, and it was at, like, a gathering, and if you were into that, you'd go to that place. Because I had a valet event once next to a drag queen, like, thing that was going on. And I just thought it was just for fun. Like, I mean, I saw it. Like, we saw it from outside. And this one girl pointed out, I was like, oh, that's kind of awesome, I guess. I don't know. That just seems kind of cool. I didn't think anything of it. I didn't really know. But, like, nobody was, like, pushing it or indoctrinating it, and they weren't, like, talking to us or anything.
Yeah, I don't think it's all that awesome. I just think it's kind of weird. But I don't really care as long as you're pushing it on children.
Yeah, it's like, you know, if you're an adult, you do whatever you want to do. Like, you know, whatever. But, like, you know, a kid's like, you know, let them grow up. Like, jeez. Yeah.
I saw, like, Ann Coulter was asking this drag queen known as Lady Maga, like, what do you think about drag queen story hour? And Ann Coulter reported back, oh, Lady Maga is against drag queen story hour. She says, let the children be, and this is only for adults. So I guess they're, like, right-wing Trump-supporting drag queens that are, like, what? Condemning drag queen story hour.
Oh, man. I guess we're already in closing remarks or whatever, but...
No, let's get back to the show.
All right. I mean, I think that was pretty much it regarding that episode, because then, like, the main girl, Regina King, like, wakes up and she's, like, an Asian girl's rich Asian chick or Vietnamese chick's, like, fortress, and they're like, oh, there's the countdown, like, timer clock or whatever that they're talking about, and that's kind of, like, basically how that episode ends. I mean, I don't remember much on episode 6 or whatever, because they didn't go into Vite's, like, trial or whatever. That was, like, in episode 7. Which we'll talk about.
Yeah, the whole episode 6 was a flashback about Hood of Justice.
Yes. So. Yeah, which is Regina King's grandfather's, like, backstory.
Was there anything else that happened in the present, like when they showed coming back to whatever her name is in the office?
You're talking about Jean Smart or Silk Spectre?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
She only really shows up, like, she intervenes into, like, the dream sequence of Regina King as she's living out her grandfather's, like, past or whatever. That was, like, the only time I remember seeing her in episode 6.
Yeah. So this nostalgia drug is pretty weird. It somehow can cause her to remember, like, things that happened to multiple generations ago. So I think this is kind of following up on this plot line from our previous episode where there was a squid survivor support group.
Right.
And there was, like, a black guy who was like, I'm still having, like, trauma from the fact that my ancestor saw the squid or something like that. And so this is like something that they're pushing here is the whole genetic memory thing. Which I mentioned before,
right.
During that scene is supposed to be about, like, the genetic memory of oppression, of slavery. But this is so I guess that the writers are really, like, a big believer in this concept because they incorporated it into, like, 3 episodes in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Because the next one is also about her memories and everything, but at least she was alive for that one.
It's going through her personal past though, like. You know, Knight's personal past regarding, like, Vietnam being established as, like, the 51st state because they won Vietnam, and so, like, she's growing up there. And so then, like, you find out that her grandfather's son is, like, her, you know, obviously her dad, and he's, like, a military guy. And so, like, that's kind of, like, all we'll say on this recording right now.
Yeah, we'll save that one for next time.
Yes, well, or tomorrow night, or whenever we record episode 7.
Yeah.
And we can just kind of package this all together, I think. Or however we want to do it, so.
Yeah. So, do you have anything for closing remarks?
No, not really. I mean, we didn't really talk about the Thanksgiving. We didn't really do one of those, like, a game. Maybe we'll do that for Christmas, I don't know, but,
Well, our previous episode, we did talk about games.
Yeah, well, I guess
a little bit about Pokemon. I guess I can finish that one up, because I did finish the game today.
Did you collect all 400?
No.
No.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. I've finished the story part, and I'm pretty much done with it at this point. I don't think I'm going to revisit it. I caught, like, maybe 60 Pokemon or something like that.
Okay.
But, there is, like, a short post-game part, like an additional quest you can do, which I did, and then after that I was kind of like, yeah, I'm not really feeling the need to, like, revisit it and, like, get every single Pokemon. But I guess I will bring up some of the stuff Daft has been posting about it.
I don't know how Daft has the time to invest in, like, beating the game in, like, what, 2 days or something? Or, like what does he do? Like, hasn't he nearly caught every single thing in that game? And it's been out for 2 weeks?
Yeah. Yeah, I should check how many hours I spent on it. I think it's probably about a 30-hour game. So, yeah, I spent, like, maybe a couple hours a day on it. But and some days I didn't play it at all, some days I played it more. But the idea of getting all 400, I mean, that must take, like, 100 hours or more. I don't know. I don't know how many hours he spent on it. But he's been doing this stuff where he's... after you get all 400, you get some shiny charm where you can get, like, additional Pokemon, like, that are shiny at a higher ratio. And he says that it's 1 in every 500, and without the charm, it's 1 in every 4,000 Pokemon that is shiny, which is this slightly recolored variant that has no function other than aesthetically being 2% different or something. So he's been, like, breeding Pokemon using a foreign Ditto that he got from the Spanish version of the game. He says his friend played through the whole game in Spanish just to get this Ditto. Like, if you breed with a foreign Pokemon, it increases your odds of getting, like, these shiny Pokemon. If you put it in the, like, the nursery with the Pokemon, and the egg has a higher percentage chance of being shiny. Mm-hmm. So he said he got, like, hundreds of eggs. I think he said that he had something like 700 eggs or something to get the shinies of these first three Pokemon, the starter Pokemon. And I asked him, well, are you planning to do this with every single Pokemon? Like, how much time are you going to waste on this? And he's like, well, I just do it while I'm watching YouTube videos. And I guess that he does this at work. Like, maybe he brings his Switch in there. Well, he's supposed to be, like, naturalizing citizens and the immigration system. Instead, he's just, like, cycling back and forth next to the nursery, like, hatching eggs all day. I don't know how
I guess, like, he's able to do, like, to multitask that well but at his job, or, like, he can basically, like, accept immigration or whatever the heck, or process it. I don't know if he does I don't know, but... Like, the government job is, like, you know, you sit at a desk and you just basically, like, go through people's name. I don't know. But it's got to be easy enough where he can basically do that and also farm for Pokemon at the same time.
Yeah. Well, from what I can tell, he's always just, like, watching YouTube videos on the job or, like, browsing Kiwi Farms or watching Mr. Medicare streams or something. So, like, gosh. I don't know how taxpayer monies are being spent on this Pokemon farming business, but apparently they are.
So the lesson here is if you want to get paid and not do really a whole lot of real work, then work for the government. That's the lesson, yeah.
If you want to waste taxpayer dollars farming Pokemon eggs, that's the place for you.
I see why Trump has been, like, trying to get rid of, like, government, like programs, because they're just wasting money. So, like, you got people that were basically, like, I don't know, like, on their phone all day, and they're just, like, you know, eating up my taxpayer dollars by not doing whatever job it is.
It's very funny when people complain about Trump, like, cutting the budget to this or that, and it's like, you know, we still have a $1 trillion deficit, right? Like, he didn't cut it that much.
Yeah, we're, like, still trying to figure that out.
People were complaining that on HIV Day, he's sending out, like, a free HIV cure to people, and they're like, but he cut the budget for this, and it's like, okay, but he still, like, developed some, you know, some medicine for it that previously didn't exist, that causes HIV to go into remission with less money. Like, you just want to waste money on nothing and have nothing happen like happened for the previous 30 years of this disease.
30, 40 years. Yeah, like, it's a mess.
The first time but to go back to the shiny thing, the first time I heard about this, I couldn't even believe that people were doing this. I saw like a YouTube video about it a few years ago about how people get these things, and it's just like, how the fuck did people even figure out about this? This IV and EV breeding stuff too that people do to try to get the perfect stats on Pokemon. It's just like, you're doing thousands and thousands of Pokemon breeding, like, just so you can get a slightly colored, different colored Pokemon with slightly different stats. Like, who is even like spending that much time like investigating the code of Pokemon to figure out all this extreme autism?
I don't understand like what you win over. Like, I thought games were supposed to be fun, but I guess it's fun for people to just sit there and waste time and like dissect game code. And if it is for them, like, then, you know, more power to them, yeah, but it's just kind of like a game's there to be enjoyed. I mean, like, for me, like, I didn't play Shenmue at all. I haven't touched Shenmue in, like, a week. And, you know, for me, it was like, I got into, like, working on another AMV, and I got some work on that to do, but I just kind of, like, it was something I wanted to do for a few weeks, and I was like, all right, I'm going to sit down and get this done. And I think it's coming together pretty nicely, so... It's just kind of like, that's something I can fit. I want to, you know, that's something constructive for me, so then I can make something that other people can enjoy when I, like, you know, submit it for cons or whatever. So that's kind of like something productive I'm doing on my end. But I, you know, no one's going to see like your hard work on like digging through Pokemon codes so you can get a shiny thing. Like, how does that, what do I get out of that as someone that doesn't play Pokemon? Like, absolutely nothing. It's just bragging rights on, like, look how much of an inclusive autistic nerd I am so I can get this Pokemon and just to say I did it as, like, you know, a way to just, like, you know, waste time or basically, like, you know, like, that's my productivity. It's like, don't you want to, like, you know, invest in real estate? Or, you know, like, find a cure for some disease, or get in shape, or exercise, or something. Like,
now we're getting into ghost territory. Become a capitalist.
I didn't say that. I didn't say that part. So I'm not.
Well, I mean, the real estate thing just made me think of Ghost. That's like,
oh yeah,
because I remember when Pokemon Go came out, he was like, "What's with all these people playing Pokemon when they could be out there being capitalists?" but yeah, I basically agree with that. I mean, it is kind of ridiculous. Like, what do you achieve by getting these so-called shiny Pokemon? Like, isn't the original coloring of the Pokemon fine? Like, why you gotta be so racist against the original Pokemon's coloring? Like, what's so supreme about the shinies? The shiny supremacists.
I mean, if someone did this and were like, I'm doing this for research for like a panel at a like a, you know, gaming con, I'm like, you know, what I was able to achieve through this and like tell people how to do it or showcase like what, like, that's like one thing, but like for like personal gain, just so like you feel like you, like, I don't understand that.
Yeah.
I figured,
his other friends are like also extremely autistic or something that he lives with, and so they're all doing this too, and so he feels like this is like the like social circle that he's in is like, his friend spent hundreds of hours like playing the game in foreign languages so that he can farm like foreign language dittos to create these eggs and stuff. So he's like, oh, this is like a really cool thing to do. All the kids are doing it. We all got to be creating shiny Pokemon so we can show them off to each other. Look at these cool Pokemon I got that are colored 2% differently. Well, it's so bad.
Who the F cares? I guess for me, I'm at the point where, like, if I'm going to work hard on something, I want people to, like, kind of see it and not really brag about it, but, like, just kind of show, like, this is what I was able to accomplish on my end, and that's kind of how I feel, like, regarding making, like, AMVs again. So, like,
Of a shame you missed the reaction when you went to that con and you got them to play the thing, and then you went to another room and didn't even get to see
it. Because I didn't know, like, they were going to play it. Like, they acted like they were so incompetent in that panel. I was like, there's no way they're playing this. And I got told that it did. And I was told that everyone liked it. I was like, that's all I need. So,
yeah.
But, like, I'll know better next time, so, and I do know better next time.
Yeah, well, at least that's how you now, like, you can make more, and they'll probably play if you get it within the time limit, at least.
Yeah, I didn't even know about the time limit because no one bothered to communicate with me, but that's AWA's panel programming, so whatever.
I all I have to do about Pokemon, because there wasn't really that much more to say about the later part of the game. It's not really that different than the first part of the game, really.
Yeah.
It's a very predictable Pokemon game, like all the other Pokemon games. You go to the 8 gems, you fight some strong trainers, you fight the champion. There are some diversions along the way where you have some evil guys doing something that you have to fight, and you catch some legendary Pokemon near the end. It's all what you would expect from a Pokemon game.
Mm-hmm.
The graphics are about the same as the most recent 3DS games, even though it's a console one.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that artists are very upset about this. They're like, they're reusing models, and we thought it was going to be better, but it still looks fine. I mean, if you're used to the Pokemon games, you'll probably like it, or maybe you'll think it's too much similar to the others. I don't know, but there's some good times in it if you're into this kind of stuff. So. Yeah.
Yeah, more power to you. I just don't care about Pokemon. I really don't. I mean, there's other games I'm playing or I'm waiting to play, and so I'm good with that. I can't really think of anything else for closing remarks, so I had a really good Thanksgiving, and I bought stuff on Black Friday. It was mostly, like, movies that I found at, like, Walmart. And, what was it? I got, like, the Michael Bay movies had, like, a collector's edition 10. That's, like, a giant, like, their like, vehicle or whatever. But it's, like, in a lunch... No, it's the Turtles movies.
Oh, okay.
So they have, like,
the Turtle Van?
Well, no, like, they're this lunchbox that they got is a custom frame or custom design to look like they're, like, little bus or whatever, or van. And, okay. Or, like, it looks like a food truck or whatever. And then you have, like, the house DVDs inside of there. And then you've also got, like, you can get, like, these, like, oh, like, Ninja Turtle head bandanas or whatever. But they're, like, really cheap. I did get it. It was, like, $7-$8 or something. And I was like, well, I can finally sit down and watch the Michael Bay Turtles movies.
Both of them in there?
Yes, both of them were in there.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, that's not bad. I got, like, what was it? X-Men Dark Phoenix for, like, $5 on 4K.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so I can finally get around to watching
it. Because I really like that.
I haven't seen it yet, so I'll finally get around to watching it. What was it? I watched King Kong... Or the Kong
Peter Jackson one?
No, the Kong Skull Island movie that came out a couple years ago.
So, the recent one, yeah.
Yeah, that was actually a good movie. I was surprised.
Yeah, that's a good action movie.
Hold on, I got an image because I took a screenshot of everything. I got a Genesis Mini for like $50 at GameStop. Really couldn't pass that up. Let me see here. Where is... I think that's it. Yeah, so it was the Genesis Mini, and then I got, like, a Stephen King movie collection. I got Detective Pikachu on DVD.
Oh, so
I figured, you know, I haven't seen it yet, no. I bought the stuff to watch it. I got Godzilla King of the Monsters on Blu-ray. They had the Sound of Music on Blu-ray, so I like watching my old movies. And then also we got the Dragon Ball Super Broly movie that was on sale too on Blu-ray.
Mm. That reminds me, we should mention that Broly has just been recast with Derek Prince, I think. No, wait, John Young Bond.
JYB has been recast. I guess it's going to be for the Super TV series.
Well, it was a video game that he's been recast in.
Okay, I think Vic can still have his role for, like, the Blu-ray version, so, like, I'm glad I picked that up.
I have the Blu-ray, but I haven't watched it yet. I assume it's the same as the theatrical version, because otherwise we would have heard about Vic being recast, and people would have been butthurt.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad. It's like, really, I have, like, all the Broly movies, because I got, like, a beat-up set of, like, the three Broly movies. that Funimation put out, like, what, 15 years ago or something? Like, the Brawly 3-pack thing. And really, the only one that's good is, like, the original Brawly. Bio Brawly was stupid, and then, like... Well, Bio Brawly was the last one. Actually, Bio Brawly was the better one of the sequels, I thought.
I agree, yeah. And Brawly's second coming is really bad.
That was stupid, yeah. Where, like, Trunks pisses on him or something to get him to, like, let go of him.
Yeah, it's all, like, piss jokes.
Yeah. Bio Brawly was actually really cool.
Bio Brawly is pretty funny. I like the Hercule stuff in there with him and the Android 18 and all that.
Yeah,
that one, it gets a bad rap because they, like, made Brawly turn into, like, the Swamp Thing or something. But it's kind of a hilarious movie, unintentionally or maybe intentionally. I don't know.
I mean, I remember watching it. I was like, this is actually pretty good. So now I have, like, all of Vic's roles in terms of him being Brawly.
Yeah. I think JYP is, like, his main replacement at Funny, because when I saw the most recent One Piece movie in theaters a few weeks ago, he was recast as the role of Sabo, which is Luffy's brother, who was previously voiced by Vic in the previous movie, which I had also seen in theaters.
Huh.
So, yeah, I guess they've decided that he sounds similar enough, even though I don't really think they sound that similar.
No.
JYP is very distinctive, too, in the same way that Vic is. You can tell them very clearly.
I don't have an issue. Yeah, I don't have an issue with JYP. I think he's a good voice actor.
Yeah, he was good as, like, Ichigo in Bleach. He's a pretty good actor.
Even though he's, like, a New York actor, and most of the ones from Funimation are Texan actors.
I think Funimation must have gotten wealthy enough that they can
They have an office in New York. So, like, that's, they like... Do? Yeah, I'm pretty sure they have an office in New York, so they just hire New York actors.
I think they just flew people into Texas or something. But Funimation is infamous because they record all of their actors separately. Which, like, other companies in, like, New York, they would do it, like, in a sort of communal setting or whatever, where the actors would kind of, like, play off of each other, at, like, CPM or 4Kids.
Mm-hmm.
Or Media Blasters, I think.
I think when they did the Bebop dub, that was, like, that wasn't Bang Zoom. But they did feed off each other. They would be, in the rooms recording their lines. Which is why there's such good chemistry between, like, Wendy Lee and freaking Steve Bloom and Bo Billingsley.
Yeah, I think that really that works well to have them all in one room. Mm-hmm. You can get some pretty funny bloopers too, like on the Berserk TV show. If you watch the DVDs of those, they have bloopers of the actors.
This is the
song and stuff.
This is the original, not the newest one that's CGI, right?
No, I haven't seen the dub for the CGI one.
I've seen very little of Berserk, the original TV, even though I got, like, the first two DVDs for it.
It's very badass.
I mean, I don't doubt it. I mean, Berserk is something I'm going to have to check out eventually.
They were all recast for the new series.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like a Funimation dub, I think, the new one. It's probably not as good. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely the show itself sucks, the new one. The CGI sucks. Like, the plot is just...
Somebody compared, what was it, like, there was a GIF for, like, how bad the CGI animation looked, and, like, hey, look, the newest episode of Donkey Kong Country, the cartoon, and, like, I laughed, and then, like, what was it, somebody put up the whole, like, rip of, like, that Donkey Kong Country cartoon on my spleen. I think I could only stomached about two episodes of that, and I was like, it's so entertainingly bad. Like, it's just not... Yeah, it's just a bad show. Like, it's just... But it's entertaining because it's just how utterly corny and cheesy it is. And the thing is, I think they did that around the time, or maybe even before, like, Reboot came out.
Uh-huh.
And it's a Canadian-made show, and it was like, how did you guys, like, do great on Reboot, but then you totally F this up?
Yeah. Yeah, Reboot was actually cutting edge at the time. People like to make fun of it now. But that and Real Adventures of Johnny Quest, they actually were pioneering in the field. Donkey Kong Country, I'm pretty sure that looks like crap even at the time. Like, I did rent the tape that came out in the U.S. At Blockbuster in the 90s.
Yeah.
And saw it, and I was really not impressed by it, even though I really liked Donkey Kong 64, the video game.
Yeah.
Which was, I think...
The Donkey Kong Country 64 game had better CGI than that cartoon show did.
Oh, no doubt, yeah. That was quite rare, which is actually a good video game developer, but but the show, I don't know who made it, but it sucks. I watched a couple of episodes of it this year also, and it is laughably bad. I mean,
it is very laughably bad. What was it? Yeah, DK, is like, he's got a catchphrase that says Banana Slammer every time he's about to punch somebody. So stupid. And it's funny how, like, they made Dixie, or not Dixie, the girl monkey, like, it's like the sex object or something.
That is Dixie.
It was just like, man, they can't do that with cartoons now. In the 90s, they just didn't care. And that's what was great about the 90s, just, like, how unapologetically, like, they could do, like, you know, like, make female characters, like, you know, attractive. Mm-hmm. But then again, like, the downfall of that is the fact that you had, like, you know, these, like, cartoon nerds that became furries or whatever. That's kind of the downside of that, is it elevated furry fandom even more.
Yeah, and, Rare is maybe responsible for creating a generation of furries with characters like this, and like Crystal and Star Fox Adventures, and
I'm not gonna throw shade entirely at Rare for the furry community as a whole. Like that already existed, but they had a hand in making like new fans that way. But then they also made some great games like GoldenEye. So there you go, and Perfect Dark. Do what?
They were drawn in like a way that gave them characteristics of human women, right? Like they have like large breasts and butts and stuff. So
Dixie,
many kids weren't.
Dixie didn't really like Dixie was shown, but it wasn't like, you know, exaggerated kind of thing. Like for a human female body to look like a monkey. Like, she has a decently nice pair, like, rack on her, and, like, a cute butt. A terribly CGI cartoon character.
Isn't she dressed like a slutty girl from the South with, like, a...
She's got the white tube top and the booty shorts or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's called Dixie. I mean, like, she's supposed to be like a slutty down-home girl or something.
Oh, yeah, and like, and Donkey Kong's unapologetic on like how horny she makes him feel. Yeah. She's like, she's like, you know, like, every time I look at her, like, it's like, she makes some comment, I'm like, that's totally sexual. But you know what? We didn't care in the 90s because we were going to find that out anyways. So, I'm just like, man, I miss the 90s so much in ways. Yep. So.
Yeah, I know Anita Sarkeesian like really goes after this character. I never watched her videos, but she really hates the Donkey Kong stuff, and she even hates like Trixie Kong, who is not even sexualized.
Trixie was in the second game. She's like a kid to Diddy.
Right.
She's got the blonde ponytail, and she uses her ponytail to do stuff. She is not useless at all.
Her complaint was like, "Oh, it's just like the male character." Like, they made her a girl, and so she doesn't exist independently. She's just a female version of the male one. She complains about Ms. Pac-Man and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just like, yeah, they just had the boat of Pac-Man.
My quote to her is, bitch, please. Yeah, I don't care.
I guess you're not entirely wrong, but, it's like, I don't care.
No, I don't. Not with her. And anyways, we're about an hour into this recording, and I really need to go to bed, so...
That's cool. We'll do the other one soon.
Alright, so this is kind of part
one.
You
can just dump this one out, or combine them, or whatever.
My plan was to combine, so I figured this is, like, part one, and then we'll do part two tomorrow.
Okay.
Alright.
Then later.
Later. All right. We're rocking. We're recording.
Okay.
And I can't even remember what happened in episode 7 because that was like 2 days ago.
Oh. Well, we did well enough with the other one that we saw 2 days ago, I guess.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll go right into it. It starts with another flashback, doesn't it? Avar's childhood in Vietnam.
Right. Where she's like in a video store, which is actually a pretty nice looking video store. And
like a spinning rack with like VHS tapes on it.
Yeah, and she finds the one that like is her. That inspired her persona, which is like Sister Knight or something, and it's like a black woman, like in a, it's like Sister Act, but like probably more violent, because it's like a black woman that's a nun, but then she's also got like this like the black extra black layer of like whatever over her eyes, and she's holding like a big gun, and like, you know, little mini Regina King's just like, oh, this is totally the movie for me, and she buys it or rents it. And her parents won't approve of it or whatever when she goes across town. And as she's walking across, like, Vietnam, it's, like, you know, this established state, part of the United States, and it just has, like, Living in America by James Brown playing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was hearing that, and I was thinking, like, this is familiar. Like, I've heard this recently, because I watched all the Rocky movies not too long ago.
Yeah, it was Apollo Creed's opening theme as he's about to fight Ivan Drago in Rocky IV. I've seen all those Rocky movies several times, and Rocky IV is by far my favorite.
Oh, yeah. I just saw him for the first time just a couple weeks ago, and they have that playing, and Rocky IV is definitely, it's like got the best music and montage of that stuff.
Yeah, the band Survivor is underrated completely.
Yeah, it's just like maybe like the ultimate action movie from that period. Like, mm-hmm. It's just very much an 80s movie.
Well, I mean, it got referenced in Family Guy when Brian was training doing all this training instead of studying for like an exam or something at Brown University or whatever. It was like the 80s flashback episode where like. They do the Rocky montage with like Stewie and Brian, and then Peter has like Joe Cleveland and Quagmire as like the A-team or something.
Yeah, I was watching those movies and the Karate Kid movies, and I feel like those two series were what made the montage like this kind of iconic 80s thing that everybody does parodies of in like Teen Titans Go or Family Guy or whatever, all those popular cartoons.
Yeah.
They'll still make references to these movies 30 years later.
Speaking of Karate Kid, I picked up like the whole season 1 and 2 collection of DVD of like Cobra Kai that was at Walmart during Black Friday. It wasn't on sale, but I saw it and I was like, yeah, I need to see season 2 because like that YouTube series is fantastic. And I just went ahead and picked it up. So it's sitting on my to be watched shelf.
I watched 1 through 3 because I felt like, well, that's got to be like the peak of it, right? Like, because the fourth one it was released years later.
You're talking about the like Karate Kid movies, right?
Yeah. The fourth one is like a girl, and then the fifth one is like a reboot.
Okay, yeah. So I can't believe we're talking about Karate Kid movies, but okay. Yeah. So the one in the 90s involves Hilary Swank and Pat Morita. It was the next Karate Kid. And then, like, Michael Ironside runs, like, this JROTC, like, club or something at the high school that Hilary Swank attends. And she likes this guy that's part of it, but she's, like, doesn't want to be a muscle head. And Pat Morita is, you know, Mr. Miyagi, and he's training Hilary Swank. And then they brought it back again in the with Jaden Smith with Jackie Chan in it. Which I have not seen that movie, and I don't know if and when I ever will.
Yeah.
Yeah, Karate Kid 2. I think Karate Kid 2 might be I don't know. Like, the reason why I like Karate Kid 2 and I picked that over the other ones is my infatuation with Peter Cetera. And, I Am the Man That Will Fight for Your Glory of Love, that was it. Which I freaking have that album, like 2 copies of it.
Yeah.
That was on the Solitude Solitaire album that by Cetera in 86. And so, like, I grew up listening to that cassette tape when I was a kid. And I still have it, and it still works. And then I found a vinyl track of it at, like a Second in Charles, like a couple years ago, and I picked that up for like $3. And then I have like the digital copy of it on like my phone, so I listen to it from off and on.
Yeah, the second one is pretty good. Maybe it is better than the first one. Like in the first one, Morita is kind of just like, I don't know, like I think if they did the first one now, it would be called racist, because he's just like kind of like a caricature of like a Japanese like master or something. Like these like stupid
but
techniques.
How
wax on, wax off, and all this stuff.
Okay, but if he's not the master, then how can Daniel-san be the Karate Kid? He's got to have a sensei who has to be Asian to teach him karate, because white ex-Vietnam vets that run a karate dojo like Cobra Kai are the biggest jerks in the world. So you can't trust like white ex-Vietnam vets running a karate school for your kids. You got to trust the old Japanese dude that's going to teach your kid right.
Yeah.
That's the message.
but then the second one, they go to Japan or Okinawa, and yeah, that's pretty cool. You're going to see like the different scenery, and
yeah, like they have the big fight in like the middle of the like that festival, because you got that like hot-headed Japanese dude that wants to pick a fight with Daniel-san. I think because he took his Japanese girlfriend. I don't know. But he's pissed off, and so they have to fight in the square. And in the third movie, it's the return of Reese, or Kreese. His dojo has been like, he can't pay, nobody, like everyone quit going to his karate school. And he's got all these bills, and so then this like rich dude with like the black ponytail, like the biggest douchebag in the world, like, is gonna bring Kreese back to his former glory and hire like this like butch SOB to fight and like basically murder they organized the fight to get like this butch kid, because the rich guy's running all of this, and like Daniel-san to like basically hate each other to fight. And I don't even understand the purpose of that anyways. I don't know, but like I just remember a guy in high school who like saw the rich guy with the ponytail, and he like looks at it, like he looks at a cover, and he saw Dan from Street Fighter Alpha, and he's like, "Man, that's that dude from like Karate Kid 3, man. Screw that guy." And he just like throws the game down and walks off. It's like, oh, man, I hate that guy. And we just started laughing.
Yeah, I guess that guy is kind of an asshole. He like throws the tree down the cliff after Daniel like trims this like rare bonsai off of this cliff, and then there's like this running water down there.
I think I barely remember that scene.
I guess the bonsai store or whatever is like about to go out of business unless he can get like another bonsai.
Yeah, they had to go to the side of the cliff to get like the rare bonsai tree that happens to be growing there on the side of a California cliff. And then I guess the butch kid is killing him, or is it the ponytail guy, the rich guy?
I don't know, one of the villains.
You saw the movie, man. You shouldn't remember this.
Well, there's like two or three like bad guys up there at the top of the cliff, and they like cut off the rope.
Okay.
And then they're like down there, and then the like tree falls in the water, and they have to rescue it and everything.
Yeah, I mean, the three main bad guys is Kreese, the rich guy, and then like the bully kid. Those are like the three main ones, and they're working together because it's all organized by the rich guy.
Yeah.
He's a bad rich guy because he's smoking Cuban cigars in a foam bathtub. Hamming that up, yeah. That kind of shows like how interesting Karate Kid is over The Watchmen, and I would rather talk about The Karate Kid than this show, but this is the official Watchmen podcast, so I think we might have to get back on topic. I don't know.
Yeah, well, maybe this is like shown in the background in the VHS store or something.
So yeah, it would be canonical. It would be canonical to The Watchmen. Therefore, we can just tirade on how great the Karate Kid movies are. That's my argument. Knight's parents get blown up by like a Vietnamese suicide bomber or something. you know, trying to get all the Americans out of his country. And then, like, she becomes, and she goes to the orphanage, of course, and then, like, she meets a female officer, and they're like, hey, you gotta be a cop, and she's like, I wanna be a policewoman now. Because, like, one of them takes, like, the criminal that, like, basically was behind the plot to blow up, like, that square that killed her parents. And they have him in the back of the car, and she's just like, yeah, that's, she's like, no question about it. She's like, yeah, that's that mother effer right there. And the officer, like, they don't even arrest people in Vietnam. They just take them out back and, like, blow their brains out.
Yeah, they have, like, a very, like, police or evil message in this show. So they're, whenever they are shown, unless it's, like, the police that are going after white supremacists, in which case they're good. But if it's any other kind of police, they're going to be, like, blowing people's brains out.
To me, like, that kind of shows, like, how accurate I think the police force is in Vietnam. Because I would just think those guys just don't take crap from anyone. And, like, some of them may end up in prison. Or in holding if they're lucky to be alive making it on the way from where they got arrested to the police station. Without being pulled over to the side and shot in the back of the head and then thrown down a ditch somewhere.
Yeah, well, my first thought, too, was kind of like, well, I guess it's true that, like, communist governments in East Asia are pretty brutal. Like, what's going on with China and Hong Kong?
But this is an American country, though, but they're still, like, bounded to their communist roots.
Yeah, so then I was thinking, well, that's not what they're going for here, because, you know, these writers are communists. But it's got to be like, oh, these guys are working with the Americans, so they have to be, like, really brutal to their own people and, like, evil. I think after that is when she meets this old woman who's like droning on about something. Maybe you're paying more attention to this than I was. I couldn't focus on what she's going on and on about. They're like sitting in some diner and she's is she related to her or something?
Okay, no, that's her grandmother.
Her grandmother.
Yes. So that's the wife to Hood of Justice. Okay. And her son is the little kid from the previous episode, Hood of Justice's kid, obviously. So, so she apparently, like, finds out that, like, her son's dead, and then she goes to Vietnam, and she's basically there to adopt Regina King. And she can't even do that without going to the back of the taxi cab and having a heart attack and dying on the street, and everyone just kind of, like, doesn't care.
Yeah. I guess that's supposed to show, like, oh, they don't care about black people dying or something like that.
I don't know.
Surprisingly, she was not, like, killed by the police for no reason or something. You would have expected this kind of show to have, like, the police just randomly blow her brains out for no reason or something for being black. But, yeah, she just randomly keels over, and, like, there wasn't really any indication that she had health problems or anything, so it kind of was really random.
Because I was just like, okay, she obviously got shot. Maybe there's, like, a blood trail or, like, there's a pool of blood and we'll know. And there wasn't anything there. So, like, she just died.
Yeah.
I was like, man, that sucks.
Yeah.
But doesn't that transition to Adrian Veidt's court trial?
Okay. I guess so. I'm trying to remember if there's anything more in the flashbacks, but I don't think there was anything more there. So, yeah.
Yeah, we kind of have the highlights.
They do go over to the Veidt thing next, where he's in a courtroom, and they've all got powdered wigs, and it's supposed to look like a colonial-era court, where they have, like, George Washington type hair and stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. They're, like, making a mockery out of the proceedings, because, like, pigs start appearing and stuff.
Wait, was that before or after Adrian Veidt ripped a loud one?
That may have been after that, yeah.
That's right, because they have a jury up there, and the guy that's like the judge or the warden or whatever is just like, you know, this isn't the jury we need, you know, like, I got the real jury, and then, like, a bunch of pigs come in there. Right? And he picks one up, and one of them squeals. He's like, that pig says guilty, and, like, you're guilty, Adrian Veidt. I'm like, is this a commentary on, like, kangaroo court social media justice or something? That's what I took it.
I don't know. maybe it's just supposed to be funny or something. Or it's supposed to be, like, a commentary probably on, like, our racist judicial system or something, like, that they don't take the right to defend it seriously or something like that.
Hmm.
I know that, just to give, like, a personal example, in high school, I had, in my art class, they made us do, I think it was, like, either an active shooter drill or something like this, where they, like, turn off the lights, and they had us all hide in a closet, and a black kid farted really loud. and he's like, "I didn't mean to. I didn't do nothing. I didn't mean to, teacher. I'm honest. I didn't mean to." And then she sent him to, like, detention for, like, several days. So I guess it is true that they can be kind of assholes. But
it's like, thanks, Tyrone. You got the whole class killed because you couldn't hold in your fart.
Yeah.
I mean, like, them, yeah. Man, like, Auntie's cooking must be really good for him just to rip a loud one.
The teacher was like, "You meant to. This was you making a fool out of us during this critical moment. We were going to save your life, and you farted."
We're going to save your life in a fake school shooting drill. That's so funny.
Yeah. That teacher was really a bitch, though. She was, like, pregnant, so she was, like, really hormonal.
Oh, jeez.
Angry with everyone. Like, that... it was, like, the only class I ever got like an F in was that class, because she was just, like, hated everyone.
I don't get how, like, people can be teachers like that. Like, don't you want your students to succeed and, like, at least help them?
Yeah.
And if you're not, then, like, why are you being a teacher for?
Yeah.
Like, if a student puts in, like the effort to, like, wanting to know, then, like, you need to help them. That was the issue that I had at colleges too. Like, some of the teachers I had at, like, my university, that, like, they just, like, why are you a teacher?
Yeah, I understand they're in a difficult position, because, like, it's a mandatory class, and obviously not every individual is going to be an artist. Like most people do not have artistic skill. They're not going to become an illustrator or whatever.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of people are going to produce, like, crappy art, but, like, you can't really be that harsh on them. You kind of just have to be like, "Oh, that's nice, son. I really like it, even if you don't." And just like slap a positive grade on them, because otherwise, like, if people don't pass through school, like, their life is going to ruin.
Alright, I mean, art is subjective anyway, so...
Right.
Give or take.
I have to be older than beauty, you know.
Yeah. Anyways, so Watchmen, I remember we talked about Adrian Veidt ripping one in court.
Right. That got me off my anecdote. what was his punishment after the verdict?
I don't think he got one. They just said he was guilty. And he just sat there. He's just like, "Man, this is bullcrap. I don't even know why I'm here. Yeah. I can't wait to get out of here." And maybe he might in the next episode. I don't know. I just know Regina King is hooked up in, she's got some tube connected to her because she was ODing on, nostalgia. And she's at, that rich Asian chick's place. And it turns out that she's, like, trying to go to, like, she thinks she's hooked up to her grandfather to keep her alive. And it turns out, like, she's hooked up to an elephant in, like, another room that's, like, sedated. I'm kind of like, how did they get an elephant in there?
Yeah, I think that's like, you know, there's this phrase, "an elephant never forgets," that the elephant supposedly has this great memory. I think that this is like, they're like draining elephant memories or something, and like using them to make people have this total recall from the nostalgia drug that they pump into them, that somehow allows them to like remember things that they were not even alive for.
Huh.
I mean, I'm just guessing, like, why there's an elephant there.
Well,
like,
let me tell you my bullcrap commentary on, like, why the elephant was in there, because the Republicans, they want to hold down black people and have them tied to them and, like, all these promises of, like, yeah, we are lowering down the unemployment and you are getting jobs. We want to make you think that way because you're nostalgic for your freedom and you're really held down by a tube and can only go so far because the Chinese have you really controlled. And that is the most, like, Jeff from the Daily Anime Podcast, like, bull crap psychedelic explanation on like political commentary I can think of off the top of my head. Because therefore the elephant represents like Republicans. So it's easy to make.
Is he still doing that daily? I'm guessing it's not that daily.
Oh no, it hasn't anymore. Been daily in like maybe a year.
Yeah.
But he puts out something once in a while.
But yeah, the elephant, yeah, maybe it is a symbol of the Republicans. I hadn't thought of that, but everything in this show seems to be very political. So,
mm-hmm.
It's a sign of that they want to put you back in chains, as Joe Biden said during the 2012
election.
Oh
my gosh! Oh, what was it? So Jean Smart visits the chief of police's like wife at her house. And she starts going through, like, all this stuff about what she was able to find, like, based on Regina King being in the nostalgia coma. And you think, like, you know, this woman is just, like a sweet old lady. And she doesn't know what her husband's dealings are. And she's like, absolutely, I'm a racist. And she basically, like, has, like, a trap door in her living room. And Jean Smart doesn't have the common sense to jump out of the chair to, like, avoid falling down, like, 30 feet or something. Because she whips out the remote, and she starts pointing it at her. And Jean Smart is just sitting there like, what is going on? Like, and she starts freaking out. And then the woman's, like, sitting there slapping the side of it, trying to get it to work. Yeah, and then she finally falls, and I was like, Jean, when someone's pointing a remote at you and they have, like, the most angriest, pissed-off look, you know that's not a good sign. Get out of that chair and cap her in the skull. Yeah. But without her doing that, she would have never gotten to the Cyclops / 7th Cavalry organization or whatever.
Yeah, didn't she hear the music start to become ominous as she talked to this person?
Well, see, here the thing is, we hear, the audience hears the music, but the actors don't.
Right.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, the music kind of sells it, like, okay, stuff's about to go down.
Yeah, I don't know if it's literally Hans Zimmer music, but it's that type of music we're talking.
Well, that Trent Reznor was doing all the music for this, and apparently it's, I don't know.
Oh, that's right, yeah. So then after that, is it more of the stuff in, with, Angela Abar and that, like, Vietnamese woman, or...
Well, Angela Abar, like, leaves the compound or whatever, and she has to, like, run over her own, like, teammates to get out of the place.
Well, she only leaves after she's been told that Dr. Manhattan is somebody that she knows, right? And then she figures out that it's her husband.
Yeah, and then we find out her husband has been Dr. Manhattan the whole time. And she, like, digs in his forehead and gets out as, like, his little symbol thing. So, like, the previews in the next episode is going into, like, I guess how we got back to Earth or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
I guess how they met. So it's more backstory.
So that he wouldn't remember who he was. Because, like, the issue that he had in his previous relationships was that he was too distant because he had this, like, cosmic awareness where he would kind of fade in and out of reality because he could, like, see all of time and space. And so that made it difficult for him to be on the level of these women that he was with in the past.
Right.
So this time he like, became very down to earth. He became a down-home brother and forgot all about all that stuff. And he was telling his kid about how there is no God, even though in this universe, Dr. Manhattan kind of is God.
That would make sense now.
Yeah. That was, I guess, foreshadowing. Like,
yeah.
He was, like, not self-aware. They were showing that in that scene.
It's kind of like Yeah, I was like, man, that, you know, that, that those are the, like, the worst parents. And then I realized, oh, it's Dr. Manhattan, because only it would take someone that's like has a godlike powers to realize that there is no God.
Well, and then I was remembering at the start that there's some stuff that we skipped over, because it does begin with the Dr. Manhattan related scenes before it gets to the Vietnam stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Where he's like walking around in Vietnam and stuff, and they
you can totally tell that's green screen. That someone's dressed up as Dr. Manhattan, like on a green screen, like, you know, like, you know, like looking like they're like huge in like Vietnam, walking around.
Yeah, they made like a little set of Vietnam and they walked through or something, or it was CGI.
Yeah. Is there anything else we might have missed?
I don't think so.
I think that about covers it. So 26 minutes in.
Have you been watching Mandalorian?
Yes.
Have you seen all four?
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay. Because we only talked about the first one on here. I guess we could do like a quick mention on what we thought of the later episodes.
It's been getting really good so far, and Baby Yoda apparently is incredibly popular. So popular that kids want them for Christmas, and there is no toy that's coming out for Christmas.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you. It was on the news today.
There was there's not merchandise of Baby Yoda.
Yeah, well, no, the thing is, the news report that I saw was like, the reason why Disney won't put out Baby Yoda is because when they put out the action figure, it's going to spoil some things about what's going to happen later in the series. And I'm like, that doesn't make any freaking sense. You know how many times they push toys before a show comes out? Lots. Bandai did it with Gundam. That doesn't spoil anything.
Why don't you just depict him the way he's depicted in every episode, which is wearing a robe and looking like Yoda?
I don't understand. I don't understand why Disney just can't make 6 different Yoda action figures in 3 months, because people are going to buy it.
Yeah, like, make a variant for the way he looks in a later episode or whatever.
Oh my gosh, he's going to wield a lightsaber. We'll just make version 2 of him when the lightsaber stuff comes out. I mean, freaking, yeah. It's supposed to come out sometime next year.
Doing a lightsaber battle or something?
Oh my gosh.
Maybe it will.
You never know with this show. But no, so far it's been really good. It's like basically kind of like a space western, and I really dig it.
I saw today there was some commentary that some airhead and actress made on the red carpet.
Laura Dern.
Yes.
Was disappointed.
They were asking her, what do you think of Baby Yoda or something like that? And she said, I saw him at a basketball game, and that's all I'm going to say about this.
Yeah, I don't understand how that woman can, like... Okay, I really liked Laura Dern when she had a role in Jurassic Park, the first movie. And that was really like the last time I remember her being in a main role in something. And it's like since then, I don't know what happened. But it's like, man, like I'm kind of thinking, like when I look at her, I'm like, is there going to be another Jurassic Park and there's just an older version of like you still with Sam O'Neill? Maybe? I don't know.
I doubt it.
Yeah. At this point, like... I mean, they keep making the Jurassic World movies, so there is a possibility they brought Jeff Goldblum back. So maybe they'll bring back Dr. Grant and her character, and I can't remember her name.
But, no, one can. Why no one's going to bring her back.
Do what?
No one can remember her name. That's why they're not going to bother bringing her back. People don't remember Jeff Goldblum. They don't remember the other actors.
I remember Sam O'Neill as Dr. Grant. Okay.
Okay.
Nobody else may not. That was just sad. He was in the third Jurassic Park film. Like, come on.
I mean, yeah, the original cast is fine and all, but they're doing fine with the new actors that they have. Like the main actor is like a big star and everything, and
Chris, Andy Chris from Pratt. Park and Rec, yeah, Chris Pratt, yeah. I don't know. We'll see how on those new Jurassic Park movies. Like, I mean, I keep seeing them when they come out in theaters, so like, I'm happy with them. No, because like this recent episode of Mandalorian, episode 4, kind of felt like Seven Samurai or Magnificent Seven, Kind of, but like it's just really like him. It's the Mandalorian and the bounty chick or whatever.
I was thinking Samurai Jack.
Yeah, but like she's an actual MMA fighter. I can't think of her name right now.
Oh, she is.
An
actual fighter. I didn't know. Mm-hmm. They fight when they first meet, and then Baby Yoda shows up, and he's like sipping a cup of coffee, which like became a meme on Twitter.
Oh my gosh.
Then they stare at him, and then they're just like friends now.
Yeah.
They're like, "Do you want to drink something too?" And then they're just like sipping together, and then they're just chatting, and then they're like thick as thieves all of a sudden.
Well, like the thing is, like for this one, they go out to like this like remote area, and you know they're defending him from these like raiders that are keep attacking their camp. Because they can't like really like pack up and leave, even though the Mandalorian has suggested that. Because it's like, you know, like, oh, you know, it's taken us so long, they have like, they're krill farmers. And so it's like, you know, hey, it took us like many generations to get to where we are, where we're actually like making, you know, krill and selling it and having a good life out here. And so it's just like, okay, we have to fight these guys. And so then they wind up like, you know, they take out the AT-ST.
They have to train like the villagers, and so
yeah.
You see like a lot of scenes like in Samurai Jack episode 3 where Jack is like training the dogs to fight the spider robots.
That's right.
They're like training them how to use these like wooden spears and stuff, and they're playing that theme music with the flutes or whatever, and they all have to work together to take down the robot and everything.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
What I really enjoy is the AT-ST, the Raiders, they got a hold of it. They pimp that sucker out with like red neon lights inside of it. Cause it looks so menacing when it's walking towards them.
Oh yeah.
It looks so awesome. Yeah.
In the dark. Yeah.
Yeah. And then of course there's that whole thing where like, you got the single mother out there that's like, you know, attracted to the Mandalorian. And,
she wants him to take his mask off, and so he has to explain to her that he's not actually a Mandalorian, that he was, like, adopted by the Mandalorian, and that he has not allowed anyone to see his face since he was a child.
Otherwise, he can never put the mask back on. See, I thought that was, like, the code of the Mandalorian regarding, you know, once you put that on, it can never be taken off in front of anybody else. I didn't hear the part where like he's not technically a Mandalorian because I thought he was.
Well, he says like he was orphaned and the Mandalorians took him in, and so he wears that to like fit in with the other Mandalorians. And then, so
well, he trained with them, so he's one of them basically.
Yeah, but he's like an honorary Mandalorian, but that gives him like an outcast status that shows why he would empathize with the Baby Yoda too, because he's like this little baby that's like out there on his own in the world.
Yeah,
he has to take it in the way that they took him in.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like trying to find a community that can adopt him the way the Mandalorians adopted him. And so the Baby Yoda is like getting along real well with these kids in the village, mm-hmm. and he's like sucking on frogs and stuff.
Yeah,
and like, all the other kids are like laughing at him and stuff. But then he wants to leave the kid there so that he can have a normal life. But then the bounty hunters show up and they're about to shoot him as he's taking off his helmet with the woman because she's trying to persuade him to stay there. But then he's like tells her no and he pulls it back down.
Well, no.
So then
they were outside and like he was talking to her and then like I didn't know he was about to. I guess he was about to take it off.
She was taking it off for him.
That's right.
Pull it back in.
Okay, and then like you hear a gunshot ring out, and it's actually like the MMA fighter that's that killed like the bounty hunter dude, and so it's like you know now it kind of shows like they can't really go anywhere without like somebody trying to find them.
Yeah, well, he was like pulling it back down, the bounty hunter shifts his aim to Baby Yoda, and then you hear it fire. And Baby Yoda drops, so it seems like he's been shot.
Yeah.
But it turns out the other kids have just, like, pulled him down because they heard the gunshot of the MMA fighter shooting the bounty hunter.
Yeah.
So that must have, like, given a lot of, like, Baby Yoda fans a heart attack there, because they thought, like, Baby Yoda was dead.
Oh, because I was at a friend's house watching, and he's just like, oh, no, they better not. They better not do that to Baby Yoda or whatever. So I've got a bit of an audience when I'm watching this on Friday nights.
Everyone
somebody
loves Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
It's, like, I'm surprised they don't just call the show Baby Yoda.
The Adventures of Baby Yoda.
That'll be like the spinoff show. They'll make like a children's cartoon or something with Baby Yoda.
Oh, dude, what they ought to do is make like a really crappy Filmation cartoon on Baby Yoda.
Baby Yoda, they make our dreams come true. Or something like that.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they'll have like Baby Yoda, like Baby Boba Fett, and Baby Jabba the Hutt. maybe they'll even do something stupid like Baby R2-D2 and C-3PO, like little baby robots.
It sounds like the Muppet Babies, but it's just like Muppet Yoda or whatever.
Yeah, well, I guess
Baby Yoda. Da, 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 da. I don't know.
Isn't it even the same puppeteer, Frank Oz, that did Yoda, that did the Muppets as well?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, so that would fit, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know if that guy, he's dead, right? Or is he still doing...
No,
is he
Frank Oz is... Frank Oz, I think, died.
Okay,
hold up.
He's dead.
Hold up.
Maybe he's just old, I don't know. They made a big deal about this being like an actual puppet of Yoda, because like people were.
He is not dead.
He's alive. Okay.
He is still alive. I cannot believe it.
How old is he?
75.
Oh, okay. I thought he was older than that. Yeah. So I wonder if he's doing the puppeteering for this, because they said like they were gonna make it CGI, and the Warner Herzog said, "You are cowards. Just keep it." And then they were like, well, we can't like disrespect this film legend here, so we gotta just do what he says.
Yeah. Yeah, he's basically been like doing like puppeteer stuff in the movie since like the 70s.
Yeah.
He's actually in the new movie Knives Out. Huh. So he does...
Oh, that's the new one by Rian Johnson.
Yes, Rian Johnson. It's got Chris Evans, Daniel Craig, Jamie Lee Curtis, Don Johnson's in it. Now I have to see it now.
Yeah, it looks like some sort of Clue type thing, except for they've like modernized it, where one of the kids is like Albright, and yeah, they tried to make it contemporary, I guess, by making all the like rich people really like stuck up and conceited.
Yeah.
But the trailer for it is good, like the music and everything. It's like very dramatic. But I'm sure that a lot of people will never forgive that guy for The Last Jedi and will like be boycotting all his movies from now on.
Yeah.
I don't know how much blame to assign to that guy individually versus how much is like corporate mandated by Disney. Like,
I feel like it's maybe a 60-40 where it's the corporate mandating and then him. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, to me, thinking of, like, a Star Wars film as, like, some auteur thing where the director has total control, it just seems ludicrous.
Yeah.
Other than maybe, like, the first Star Wars where George Lucas did it, like, on his own as, like, a low-budget thing. And maybe the Phantom Menace, because nobody could really tell him no, because he felt like a legend to all the people who were working around him, because they all grew up like watching it, and so they couldn't like say, no, don't do it like your way, we don't want Jar Jar, we don't want the Trade Federation.
Yeah,
those were the two movies where Lucas like got to do it mostly like his own way, and then like the later films in each trilogy have been more like corporately mandated.
Yeah,
so I feel like maybe that's the case with the new one too, like maybe The Force Awakens was kind of like Abrams' vision of like, oh, I've always wanted to do like a remake of A New Hope and use modern technology, but still keep some practical effects, and have like a strong woman lead and all this. Like maybe he really wanted to do all that, but then I feel like the second one, it must have been like heavily mandated because they have all these other films that they're producing. all these spin-off films and everything, and they're going to want to keep the continuity tight between it all. You know, there's cartoons and live action shows and everything that are all being produced as well, and so they're not going to just let somebody just do whatever they want with this, you know.
Yeah.
What do you think of the trailers and commercials for episode 9? Do you think it's going to be good, or?
I sure hope so. I mean, I don't know.
Oh. I mean, I feel like they're doing a good job of like building hype back up for it after there was so much hate on the last one.
Yeah, I was thinking of, okay, so Jim Henson was the guy I thought that. Okay, so like, yeah, Jim Henson died in 1990.
Yeah, the guy who created Muppets and Sesame Street.
Yeah, and Frank Oz like helped with Sesame Street too. He did that for a long time.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Does it say on his IMDb or Wikipedia if he's still active in the field or if he's retired?
Oh no, Frank Oz is still like active.
Oh,
like,
that's right. You just said he was just doing Knives Out.
Yes,
but if he did the recent Star Wars stuff.
Yes, anything with Yoda, any role with Yoda, he's in that.
Okay, good. I guess that's interesting that Baby Yoda is still like a Frank Oz creation.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if they're gonna, if there's some spoiler, like maybe Baby Yoda is like the actual Yoda as a baby or something, rather than being like his descendant or whatever, because I think this is set after
Return
of the Jedi, isn't it?
It's the timeline is that it's 5 years after Return of the Jedi is what everyone keeps saying. And my thing was like, okay, it can't be a reincarnation of Yoda because it happened in Return of the Jedi, and that was 5 years before, and they said that the baby is 50 years old. So unless somebody fibbed on dates purposely to say that he's 50 or that the people in Star Wars universe are like, you know, like they don't know the timelines. It's something doesn't add up, because if it is a reincarnation of Yoda, then like one of those facts is wrong or both.
Well, you know, year is a relative term because it refers to the amount of time for a planet to circle the sun. So maybe like the planet that Yoda is on, is it called Dagobah?
Well,
like maybe that planet like circles the sun like much quicker, close. It's like closer to the sun, like Mercury.
Okay,
closer. Something.
The thing is, there's no information on what race Yoda is, like a Yoda baby or the Yoda race is. It's just like Yoda. I wouldn't say immigrated, but he basically. What's that? Where you kind of like you're in hiding, sort of.
Exile.
Yeah, he's an exile on Dagobah to hide after the, you know, the Empire basically like rose up and killed all the Jedi or whatever.
That's true.
That's where he's been hiding the whole time in refuge, like the same way Luke did in Episode 8, where he was in exile on that like water like secluded like planet that nobody could be able to find him.
Yeah, that's true. In episode 3, after he like fails to stop Palpatine from rising, he flies off to another planet. And I remember there's a very brief scene of like Yoda, his like space pod landing on Dagobah that some special effects artist like really wanted to include in the film.
Yeah.
And Lucas wouldn't allow it. And like on this special features of the episode 3 DVD. This artist is like really complaining about it and saying like how heartbroken he was that this like Dagobah model that he used couldn't be included in the film, but that Lucas was like, this has to be focused on Anakin. I can't have this Yoda diversion here.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's true. Dagobah, that's not the original home of Yoda. We don't, or maybe it is. Maybe he just went back to his home world. But it seems like that would be kind of like an obvious place for the Empire to look for him. So maybe.
Yeah, I mean, like, they never found him before. I mean, they were never thought to, like, you know, look for anyone on Dagobah.
Well, when Yoda is acting all goofy in the, like, original trilogy, is he just, like, suffering from dementia? Or is that just, like. Is that just, like, Pat Morita acting goofy in The Karate Kid? Like, it's like an act or something, or...
Well, John, keep in mind, this came up before Karate... Empire came out before Karate Kid.
I know, but, like, that's like an old, like, I don't know, maybe it's like a stereotype about, like, the wise Asian master that acts kind of daffy. Like, how,
I think you're
the
right,
drunken fist and stuff.
Yeah.
In, like, the original Dragon Ball, when he's posing as Jackie Chun. Like, that's like a Jackie Chan routine that they kind of, like, bootlegged over to, like, various other, like, mm-hmm. wise Asian master characters. To make him, like, really, like, funny, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But also powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked a lot. Excuse me. Yeah, we talked a lot about episode 4. Like episode 3. No, that was the one where basically like they have he goes and rescues Baby Yoda. After like he returns Yoda to the old Imperial guy to get his collection. And you know, by then, because in episode 2 they really bond it. And and he's able to get the baby back, like still like in that like little hideout or whatever. And he like murks all those stormtroopers. And then they have the big shootout with like the bounty hunting guild and Boba Fett because he's like rescuing the baby. And then the Mandalorian's coming to help bail him out. So then they can escape. And then, like, Carl Weathers, you think he gets zapped, but he actually, like, winds up surviving because he has one of those, like, Imperial, like, that precious metal that's, like, a block that's, like, in that particular part. So then, like, you know he's coming back.
Yeah. Episode 2, they're on, like, the Jawa planet. And,
yeah.
And they have to, like, get onto, like, a Jawa ship and, they have to steal an egg and various things, and Yoda is like helping him battle like these beasts in the cave and stuff. So they
it's just the one, yeah.
Because Yoda like levitates rock and drops on the beast or something like that. And then he feels like he's like honor bound to like this baby because it saved his life.
Yeah. Yeah, because the Jawas like basically steal all his stuff. And then, all they really want in return to be able to put everything back together is to take, like, an egg from, like, the cave that has, like, the biggest rhino in there. And then, you know, he defeats him with the help of Baby Yoda. And they're like, yeah, okay, sure. And then they wind up just dumping the stuff off. So then they had to, like, repair the ship, which, you know, was able to fly back to, you know, so he can dump off the baby or whatever. That's kind of really the highlights of the show so far, and like, you know, in a couple of days the next episode comes out.
Yeah, episode 5 will be out. We're recording on Wednesday.
Yeah. Yeah, tomorrow I'm looking forward to seeing Char's Counterattack at my local Regal Theater that's like over an hour away. And that's going to be subbed only. My brother's coming with me because I paid for his ticket. I've only seen that movie dubbed. I've never seen it subbed. And I don't know how my brother's gonna react when he's gonna see the end of it and be like, "Oh, what's just happened?"
Oh, he hasn't seen it before?
No.
Has he seen any Gundam?
He's seen G Gundam.
Oh, well, that's a good one to start with.
Yes, and he like the Universal Century stuff is just kind of like. No, what was it? Like, I did reserve seating because I was like, I didn't know, like, how popular it was going to be. And it's not because I go in there, there's been, like, 4 or 5 of the bookings. Okay, maybe 6. Like, and that was Monday when I put that in. And, yeah, now.
Is it a one-night only event?
It's a one-night only event, yes. And I'm like,
are you showing it subbed?
Yes. And, like, I've seen the movie, like, a handful of times, but it's only been dubbed, and so now it's like, okay, I can see on the big screen, and I can kind of enjoy it. And so I'm probably going to like how it looks on the big screen, so we'll find out.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what I did, like, you know, a couple years ago, like, when I saw Castle Cagliostro in, like, in theaters. Like, I had, like, you know, I was, like, in my last semester at school, and it was a nice way for me to, you know, kind of like get over my breakup with my ex So I just kind of had like all this like self, like this time alone with myself, and like, you know, just go see movies and just kind of did whatever. And I met new friends and new people, and so like I'm way happier now. But yeah, like I saw Castle Cagliostro in theaters, like at the same theater, and I've gone back there to see Dragon Ball Super, Broly. That was the last time I think I was able to see that movie. I think that was it, yeah. Because I went somewhere else to watch Battle Angel Alita with my buddy Eric.
Well, that one had a bigger release.
That did, yeah. And he had a theater closer to his house, so we just wound up hitting up that. Just trying to think. I don't really know what else to talk about for closing remarks.
That's fine. I think we can shut it down.
Yeah, so this is good because I'm combining both episodes, and I'll try to get this out maybe by Saturday. I don't know, so we'll see. So this has been another episode of the Watchmen Cast, a 2-for-1 special, and then we'll join us next time on the other next episode of the Watchmen Cast. So
there's three left.
I thought there was two left. Hang on, let's check episodes here.
I saw a trailer at the end of one of them that said only 3 episodes left, and I thought it was the last one we saw.
I believe you're probably right. Let me see here. There should be like a list of episodes. No, there's only 9, so the last one's on December 15th. I actually leave to go to Texas like the 18th. So like that Monday night, we'll have to watch it and then record it, and I can just put it out like on a Tuesday or something. And then it'll be like my last record. We haven't even done anything for like a Christmas. We might as well record Christmas afterwards.
So is this 6 and 7 that we just did this week?
Yes. Okay, eight comes out on the 8th, and then the 9th one comes out on the 15th.
Okay. So the next one's out in like 3 or 4 days?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't even know if we're going to get anything out as a Christmas episode, because I've done pretty good like putting something out on Christmas Day, but since I'm going to be out of town, probably not so much. I don't know.
You've got some like cons or something you can drop, right?
That's true, yes. I can get some cons together and put that out there, so.
There's a con review that Cloud has been wanting to do. Maybe we can record something like that this weekend.
Alright, well, I'm gonna be in Charlotte on Saturday, so we're just gonna have to see.
Okay.
Yeah. Alright, gonna go ahead and end this. So, thanks for listening to the official Watchmen podcast, and tune in for the next one. So, later.
Later.
I will always love you. I would never leave you alone. Sometimes I just forget, say things I might regret. It breaks my heart to see.